Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, one quarterback that both Clemson and South Carolina should be interested in. Get to that a little bit later on. Plus, Paul Charchian will join us in about 25 minutes to talk week 9 of the NFL season. It's the midway point. And also help you set your fantasy lineups for the weekend. Thursday night football tonight. Don't forget to get your picks in for the football weekend by the end of the day tomorrow. You have till 5 p.m. tomorrow to get your picks in online at charlestonsportsradio.com. And the winner will get themselves a Fan Zone gift card. charlestonsportsradio.com. Go make your picks. By the end of the day tomorrow, just pick a winner of the games this weekend, and you'll have a chance to get a Fan Zone gift card. I give you a pick for every primetime game in the NFL. We've hit on 57% of the picks this year. Of course, I'll have my regular picks on the show tomorrow. But we do have Thursday night football tonight. Jets-Colts. Not the sexiest matchup, but I think it could be an intriguing game. You know, both teams, the Jets are 2-5. They're out of it, but I'm curious to see what Mike White can do. And the Colts 3-5 this past week was a huge loss for them. But you imagine at home, if you win this game, you get to 4-5. The Titans don't have Derrick Henry. It's too early to punt on the Colts just yet. I mean, we're, you know, not even halfway. Tonight is the halfway point for them, and a win tonight, they'll be 4-5. Last year, that last wild card team was 4-4 at this point. So, and the Colts are at home. Short week, you get the Jets. The Colts are favored by 10.5, which is a big number. Vegas loves the Colts. They were favored this past week against the Titans. Their win total was one of the higher in the conference heading into this season, surprisingly. Vegas is big on the Colts. Carson Wentz has been playing better, but just too many silly turnovers. I'm going to take the Jets because it's too many points. Most things tell you to go against the Jets. Young quarterback, starting on the road for the first time, plus a short week. And you know he's going to be overvalued because of the way he played on Sunday. Had one of the more impressive debuts in NFL history. So you would think that would actually lower the number because people are, you know, oh, that Mike White, he's pretty good. But 10.5 is just too large for me. So I'm going to take the Jets. These primetime games historically, or I shouldn't say historically, but throughout this season, the primetime games usually hit the under. And so, as I always say, right, if you're not going to get a ton of points, you don't want to take a heavy favorite because the idea is that there's not going to be enough points scored for them to run away. And the Colts play a bunch of close games. They lost to the Titans by 3 this past week. They lost to the Ravens on that comeback. They lost them in overtime. Right? They lost to the Rams by 3 earlier this year. They've only won two games. They've played two games this year that have been decided by double digits. They're favored by 10.5 tonight. So I'm going to roll with the Jets. I think the Colts win, but 10.5 is a lot. I'll take the Jets with the young quarterback. And I'm most interested just to see how Mike White looks because he was fantastic Sunday in his debut with some of that beginner's luck. You know, now let's see how he does tonight on the road against the Colts. Short week. Maybe that's to his advantage because he still don't have a lot of tape on him and the Colts don't have a lot of time to get ready for him. So I am interested to watch it. You have two losing teams. Two teams that, I don't know if either will make the playoffs, certainly not the Jets, but I just want to see how Mike White does because Sunday he was fantastic. And I was keyed in on that game because I had the Bengals in my survivor pool. So I watched a lot of that game, and every time he made a throw, I was shocked. I go, look at this guy, over 400 yards, 17 points in the fourth quarter to come back. So I'm going to see how he does tonight. And by the way, Carson Wentz, like I said, always has these silly, dumb, costly turnovers. So 10.5 points, you know, the back door is always open against Wentz. The Colts may be in total control, but in the fourth quarter or third, whatever, he gives a free touchdown like he did last week on a stupid play. And, you know, the Jets get a gifted score and helps keep it to single digits. I'll take the Jets tonight, 10.5-point dog. That's just too many for a 3-5 team. They only have one more win than the Jets. Why are they favored by 11? Even though they're at home, short week, young quarterback, I get all that. I'm going to go with the Jets. We'll see how it goes tonight. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. I got some other thoughts that I want to get to in just a moment as well about the stories going on in the NFL this week. Unfortunately, the biggest stories in the NFL don't have to do with the football. I'll give my 2 cents in just a moment. But first, let's go to the phones. Birdman John is with us. Birdman John, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Luke. Good show as always.
Appreciate it.
You always like to bet historically or on the past. Remember Super Bowl III with the Jets and the Colts?
That's true.
There was a young quarterback named Joe Namath that predicted a win. So I'm being funny, but just think about that game.
Yeah. Hey, one of the biggest upsets, you had the young quarterback. I don't know if Mike White has guaranteed a win for the Jets tonight, but he might as well, and we'll see if he could pull the upset as well.
Yeah, but when I was just thinking about it when you brought that up. I said, yeah, that was Super Bowl III, wasn't it?
Yeah. So the Jets were 18-point underdogs in that Super Bowl, so a little bit larger. And, you know, we know what happened. The rest is history. They won 16-7, so a low-scoring game there. And so fast forward 53 years, and you got a young quarterback now against the Colts as a 10.5-point dog. I don't think Mike White guaranteed a win this week, but we'll see how he plays tonight. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Henry, a Kansas City Chiefs fan with us. Henry, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Luke?
Good. What's up?
Good. Hey, just a comment. Of course, everybody has an opinion. This football thing, playoffs and all that, okay? Of course, you got your Power Five, and then you got your everybody else five. Why don't they just make this thing simple? Have your Power Five conference championship. Or align yourself with the Power Five if you want to be a part of that. Or then have your group of five, have their championship, and, you know, align yourself if you want to be with them. And just call this thing a day.
Yeah, you know, personally, I would like it. I think you'd be better off. I think the one concern for some of the group of five is either A, swallowing their pride and accepting that they have to go do that and can't compete for the actual national championship. But the second part, too, is if you look at, say, a Cincinnati, I don't know what's better for Cincinnati. They got to play Georgia in a bowl game last year. I don't know if they would prefer to do that or go win, say, a championship for the group of five. I don't know if they'd rather take their chances of being able to play in a big time, you know, New Year's Six Bowl, at least, if it's not the playoff, and go play at Georgia and get that attention and try to beat Georgia. So I don't know which one they would prefer, but for the majority of group of five teams, there's only one or two a year that stand a chance that we even talk about making the playoff. So for the majority of them, yeah, I think they'd rather have a realistic chance at actually competing for something.
No, I agree. And I think, I mean, like I said, if you want to align yourself with the Power Five, join it, and then play those guys and see where you stack up.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right.
And you need to belong in the group of five. And then anybody below the group of five have their championship, and just make this thing simple, easy, and just leave it alone.
Yeah, that's fair. Sure, if you're Cincinnati, yeah. If you prefer the opportunity to play at Georgia, then, yeah, go join a conference and be part of the Power Five and let everyone else in the group of five go do their own thing because, yeah, again, I mean, you got Cincinnati. You have only about three teams a year that are even in the conversation. The rest of the group of five,
right.
You know, their championship is just going to a meaningless bowl game. So I would love it.
Right.
I would love two different playoffs, two different champions. We have FCS as well, so now you're essentially creating, like, another division, and you have – another postseason and champion to watch, I would probably be in favor of the idea.
Sounds good to me. And also, too, and I'll let you go, and I'll listen up. I'll hang up and listen. Of course, I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan, and I need you to work your miracle on the mojo with our quarterback and our team. Not his fault all the way, but help our defense out and rub some of that mojo on there for us, okay? And I'll hang up and listen to you.
You got it. Appreciate it. Yeah, hey, I'm certainly for this week, you got it. They take on the Packers this week. And that line moved from 1 to 8 when the Rodgers news came out. I'll give my official picks tomorrow, but I actually like the Packers as an 8-point dog. Not to win, but that's a lot of movement. And I don't think the Chiefs should be favored by 8 against anybody, and I always love to back backup quarterbacks because people don't trust them, and you could get better value in Jordan Love making his first start. We'll see if that makes one of the official picks tomorrow. From the game itself, the Chiefs, you got to win at home against Jordan Love in his first career start. Right? I mean, you know, this is now, you don't have to worry about Aaron Rodgers. You got Jordan Love in his first start. the Chiefs' defense. You got to show me something. That defense has not been good. Here's your chance. Guy making his first start on the road in short. You know, it's not like he's known for most of the week, but it's not like he's going into the season knowing he's starting week one and that's his first career start. He's getting thrown out there here midseason. Davante Adams should be back, so that obviously helps. If you're the Chiefs, you got to win this weekend against Jordan Love. I talked about the Chiefs the other day on the show, and I think there's a couple of things that are at play for the Chiefs in their struggles. And I think you kind of have to reinvent yourself. I think you have to adjust the offense. I thought the perfect example was when they were in the red zone the other night. They run that play with like the behind-the-back pass to Mahomes on the sweep, you know, and then he throws that interception inside the red zone, forcing it in, stuff like that. Like, you scratch your head and think, like, what are you doing? This isn't 2 years ago. People have kind of caught up to the Chiefs, whether it's the Chiefs' defense that makes it more difficult on their offense, the other team's defense and the way that they play making it more difficult in the Chiefs' offense. The fact that the offensive line isn't as good makes it more difficult in the Chiefs' offense. I think you got to do some different things. You can't just line up and, you know, snap it back to Mahomes and let him make things happen, you know, like it's the schoolyard. While we're on the subject, let me give you a couple of thoughts here on two big stories in the NFL that don't necessarily involve football. But one is related to that game. That's Aaron Rodgers, who is unavailable Sunday against the Chiefs because he tested positive for COVID. He's unvaccinated. I don't care if you're vaccinated or not. Doesn't make a difference to me. My only issue is that Aaron Rodgers lied about it. Now, we can nitpick and say that, you know, Rodgers went, he didn't get the vaccine. He went a different route, like a more natural approach type of deal. So maybe he thought he was vaccinated, but you knew what they were asking. You knew they were asking if you got the actual vaccine. That's my only issue with all this. Guys in the NFL, and they're not all vaccinated. Kirk Cousins isn't vaccinated, but at least Kirk Cousins was upfront about it and said, yeah, I'm not vaccinated, and people ripped him for it. So I want to see the same vitriol towards Aaron Rodgers, who lied about it. At least Kirk Cousins was upfront, and that's what bothers me more. I don't care if you're vaccinated or not. Just don't lie, right? Nobody likes a liar. They asked you about it in August. You said you were vaccinated. You weren't, and because of that, you didn't follow the vaccination. You didn't follow the rules, the protocol set forth by the NFL that unvaccinated players are supposed to. And the Packers, I'm sure, knew that he wasn't vaccinated, and they allowed him to do things he wasn't supposed to because the belief was that he was vaccinated. So I don't like that. I've been railing against the Astros. This is a different level. But I don't like when people lie to bend the rules. Right? So that's my two cents on Rodgers. I don't care if you're vaccinated or not. Just don't lie about it. Be upfront, because I don't care. I know most people will. They'll rip him apart if he was honest. But I think that's better than lying. You know, it's like if you were at work and somebody lied to get home early. The boss asked them, like, hey, did you take care of that project? Oh, yeah, I did it. Okay, right. Yeah, you could go home at 3 o'clock. And then you find out they didn't do it. Like, why did you lie? You lied so you could leave early? I don't like when people lie to benefit, right, to try to take advantage of a situation. And I've probably done it in my life before, right? You lie about something to try to get to an area. Like, you try to sneak backstage at, like, a concert or something. And like, oh, yeah, I work here. But this whole thing, you know, Rodgers lied and then because of it was able to skirt the rules all season long that he was supposed to be doing things differently because he is unvaccinated. I don't like that, especially because it's the Packers and they're 7-1 and, you know, weren't following the same rules that maybe some other guys were. Be vaccinated, unvaccinated, doesn't make a difference to me. Just be up front. That's all I ask for. And athletes and coaches lie to us at the podium every day. But when they ask you a direct question like that, I would say just be honest. Just tell us. Instead of lying and now getting caught in the lie and showing that you were breaking some of the rules, and that's obviously not a good look.
How about if they went a different route and if someone asked them if they were vaccinated or not, you know, not with the league or anything like that, and they reply, well, HIPAA says I don't have to tell you.
I mean, sure, you could say that if you want. That's better than lying. If you want to not answer the question, to me that's better. If I ask somebody something and they don't give me an answer one way or another, I guess I'd rather have that than them just straight up lie to me. So that's what I don't like. I just don't like the nobody likes a liar. Just tell me the truth. Or just say, you know, you don't want to talk about it. But don't lie to me. So that's my only issue with Rodgers. People may rip him for being unvaccinated. I couldn't care less. Just don't lie about it. And then the other thing is Henry Ruggs, of course, is the big story. And Henry Ruggs, by the way, more information has come out since we shared this when it broke on the show 2 days ago. He was traveling 156 miles per hour. Could you imagine? I couldn't even think of what that's like being in a car going 156 miles per hour. His girlfriend was in the car. She's in critical condition. There was a gun in the car. His alcohol level was more than 2 times the legal limit. Hits this poor girl sitting in her car. She dies. Terrible. And here's my let me get my soapbox and just rant for a moment here. This is what I don't like in these situations. We lose track of the real story because of the sports aspect. I don't need Derek Carr going to the podium yesterday and talking about how Henry Ruggs needs love right now, and I'm going to be the one to give it to him, and we need to support him, and this and that. It's something similar happened last week when a reporter for ESPN got a DUI as well. He crashed his car into a cop car that was at a stoplight, and he rammed into them. Fortunately, everybody was okay. There were no injuries. He got a DUI, and I saw all the messaging online, people reaching out to him, like, hey, got your back. Glad you're okay. No, sorry. That's not for me. I have best friends that I'm sure make dumb mistakes all the time. And just one mistake's not going to end our friendship. But I can't be the guy that's going to come out and say, hey, I feel for Henry Ruggs. He's got my love. Don't care. I don't care because you didn't care. I don't care about Henry Ruggs right now because he didn't care enough to call an Uber. When he got behind the wheel, he didn't care about anybody else out on that road. So sorry, forgive me for not caring about him right now. I don't care because he didn't care. He showed such little care. Drunk, driving 156 miles, not on a highway, down a normal road in Las Vegas with a gun in the car. His girlfriend, too, put his girlfriend in danger, himself, everyone else out on the road, 4 a.m. in the morning, don't care. People that are worried about what Henry Ruggs lost, there goes his career. His life is altered for the rest of time. He may have to go to jail. Okay, doesn't match what the victim's family just lost. Don't care. Just because he's an athlete. Right? I see all these people on Twitter. I see Derek Carr talking at the podium. Derek, it was a very nice message. I know he's your teammate. You know, he's a good friend of yours, I'm sure. Just don't say anything. I don't need you to get to the podium and say, Henry Ruggs needs love right now. What about the victim's family? I think they need more love. Because Henry Ruggs made the dumb decision, but his family still has their child. They can still go see him. It may be in a penitentiary, but he's still around, and he'll get out of prison at some point, and he'll get to go on and live his life and have a second chance and try to fix whatever issue he had, right? Fix the problem he made, the bad decision. He'll have a chance to come back from it. The 23-year-old woman who was just sitting in her car minding her own business, she doesn't get that second chance. So miss me, you know, and I could be empathetic or sympathetic, whatever the proper term is. I do feel for Henry Ruggs in a sense that he has to live with this for the rest of his life. His life is altered because he made a dumb decision, but he made that dumb decision. And he didn't care enough when he got behind the wheel. He didn't care about anybody else. So forgive me if my care isn't so much with Ruggs. If I care more about the victim's family who gets a call in the morning that their 23-year-old daughter, right, passed away doing nothing, going out who knows what, coming home. She was with her dog too, so you know I don't think she was out drinking. Who knows what she was doing? Doesn't make a difference. She goes out into her car trying to go home from who knows where. Maybe the store, maybe work, whatever you do at 4 a.m. She's just trying to go home. She's at a stoplight. Someone's coming 156 miles per hour. And we know from the reports that she suffered as well. The car caught on fire. She couldn't get out. She was screaming. It's a horrific story. So how about you give me give me at least a couple of days before you come out the next day with all your support for Henry Ruggs about how much love he needs. And he's got my support. I'm behind him. And yada, yada, yada. He's a great guy. All that may be true. I don't care about Henry Ruggs right now because he didn't care. So he doesn't get my care. I feel for the family instead, whose 23-year-old daughter passed away for simply just being in the wrong spot at the wrong time at 23 years old. That's the tragedy. Not that Henry Ruggs is going to have to go to jail and he can't play football anymore. Who cares? He didn't care enough because otherwise you're not out during the week when you have a game coming up at 4 a.m. drunk, driving 156 miles down the street. Made a terrible decision. There's consequences to terrible decisions. These are the consequences. He can face up to 20 years in prison. We'll see what the actual punishment is. Coming up, we will get to Paul Charchi in a little bit, and when we come back, on a lighter note, another crazy story in football that this time involves a monkey and isn't as sad as the Henry Ruggs situation. It's the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's Throwback Thursday.
What's today?
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Tuesday has no feel. Monday has a feel. Friday has a feel. Sunday has a feel.
I feel Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right, shut up, the both of you.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Mark Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with Paul Charchi in about 5 minutes. But I've been meaning to touch on this for a couple of days. I have to mention this just briefly because it's such a weird story out of college football. And Steve Sarkisian had to address it today, so what better reason than now to bring it up? Sarkisian said that the monkey story is not a distraction at all and said that that's a personal matter. If you're not familiar, and I'm sure you've heard about this by now, Texas special teams coach Jeff Banks. Like, what you do in your personal life is your personal life. But he had left his wife and four kids for a stripper named Paul Assassin, which is what a name, right? That would get me to go to the strip club, go see somebody named Paul Assassin. And not only that, but part of her act is apparently a monkey's part of her act. I don't know if that would actually get me to go see that performance. Do people go to the strip club hoping to see animals on stage, like actual animals on stage, to see a monkey dancing around the pole as well? Does that get you interested? But it's part of her act, Paul Assassin. So she's living with Jeff Banks down in Texas, and on Halloween the other night, a trick-or-treater comes over the house, and I guess they had like a haunted house going on at their house, and they had a sign on the fence that said, like, do not enter. The kid just happened to wander off, like, into the backyard, came across this monkey, and the monkey bit the kid. And according to some reports, the monkey had to be, like, pried off of the kid, that the monkey wouldn't just let go. You know, it wasn't just like a simple little, like, a nibble. It was a real, it was a monkey was latched down. It was a real bite on this poor kid. And now this has been coming, the whole story about Texas. Classic Texas footballer Steve Sarkisian. Not only is the team struggling, now you have this story of the special teams coach and his stripper girlfriend and the pet monkey biting kids on Halloween. What an ordeal. And Banks was with Sarkisian and Saban in Alabama. He went over to Texas with Sarkisian. But there were some, there have been reports about Jeff Banks being considered for the Washington State job because he played there and he also coached there. And Washington State has an opening. And Jeff Banks is considered to be one of the better special teams coaches in the country. I'm curious if this plays a role at all. Paul Assassin. And she went online to defend herself on Twitter. She eventually deleted her account. But she was posting videos and, you know, tweeting about it, about people coming after her. What a crazy story. Just everything about it. Special teams coach for Texas and his stripper girlfriend have a pet monkey who is part of her act, which is very odd to me, and it bites a kid on Halloween. Fortunately, I believe the kid's okay. And according to Sarkisian, it's not a distraction for Texas football. It is a personal matter. They're good. They're all locked into their game Saturday, and not Paul Assassin. Paul Assassin. I mean, can you have a more perfect name for somebody in that occupation? We'll talk fantasy football with Paul Charchi when we come back and get ready for the NFL weekend, which begins tonight. Charchi will join us next. It's the Mark Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Mark Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll try to link up with Paul Charchi in here this afternoon. Working through some technical stuff. Try to get the latest for this weekend in the NFL, as well as the insight for tonight and the weekend from a fantasy football perspective. So we'll try to link up with Charge. Hey, I was just talking last segment about Jeff Banks and this crazy story in college football where his girlfriend, you know, bites a trick-or-treater. Her pet monkey bites a trick-or-treater. And now there's concern about him in terms of, you know, how will this reflect on Jeff Banks? And he's considered a really great special teams coach, and you know, potentially will have an opportunity to become a head coach elsewhere, such as Washington. Well, speaking of open jobs, TCU has an opening after they moved on from Gary Patterson. And TCU, according to 24/7 Sports, their list they're putting together right now includes four names, actually. Deion Sanders, Jay Norvell, Kellen Moore, and Tony Elliott. So we're getting to that time of year where, even despite Clemson's struggles, Tony Elliott's name will still be mentioned, it seems. And I brought this up in the last week or two, but as a Clemson fan, would you even care that much at this point? Would you be hoping for a change? Would you forget about all the past success for just this year? Willing to let him leave and go take another job? We'll get back to this coming up. But joining us now is Paul Charchian, who joins us every Thursday to talk fantasy football, help you set your lineup, get ready for this week of NFL action, on Twitter at Paul Charchian, and check out guillotineleagues.com, where you can find his free player rankings today. Charch, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hi, Luke. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, appreciate you hopping on the phone and joining us one way or another today. For tonight's Thursday night football game, we always start with that. Mike White was, you know, had such the great debut on Sunday. Going into tonight against the Colts, are we trusting Mike White or some of these other Jets in this game tonight?
Well, yeah, I think it didn't look like a fluke. I can tell you that much. We've seen him now for a game and a half, and White looked good. I mean, better than Zach Wilson looked at any point, and he is turning Michael Carter into a poor man's Christian McCaffrey. 23 targets in two games for Michael Carter under Mike White. Holy cow. And the Jets clearly look happy with what Carter's doing. He's been on the field for 70% of the snaps in both of those Mike White games after not topping 52% in any prior game. Indy is the opponent tonight. They're a good but not elite run defense. They haven't allowed many touchdowns. They do give up some yards. So, you know, one way or another, through the air and on the ground, I think Michael Carter looks like another good start here. And, you know, for Mike White, this is it's a rare moment of excitement for the Jets offense. And let's just, I'm rooting for the guy. Why not? I mean, the Jets fans deserve a little something good to happen. And he's legitimately good. He threw a couple of interceptions last week, but to be clear, one of them was definitely not on him. And so, yeah, I kind of like this Mike White kid and Mike Carter. I'll tell you what, if it weren't for Ja'Marr Chase, Michael Carter would be poised to make a serious run at Rookie of the Year based on what we've seen over the past 3 weeks and his uptick in usage and success.
Yeah, he's been playing really well, and we'll see how the Jets do tonight against the Colts. Where on the flip side, you have Michael Pittman Jr. has been on a tear this past month.
Yeah.
Pittman Jr. or maybe any other Colts, you like this matchup for them tonight?
Well, you know, everybody saw Carson Wentz's catastrophic turnovers last week. Two just, you know, game, you know, sealing horrible interceptions. And we think about him doing that in Philadelphia. But let's look at the bigger picture. He didn't have any interceptions going back to week two. And really, since recovering from his dual sprained ankles, Carson Wentz has been good. He's thrown multiple touchdowns in five straight games. The Jets secondary getting rocked of late. Over the last month, they're giving up 322 yards and two touchdowns per game. So I like Wentz to bounce back in a nice performance here. And as you mentioned, Michael Pittman starts just turning into a beast. Four touchdowns in the last 2 weeks. And they run him from all over the field, left side, right side, slot. He's got excellent matchups against New York starting cornerbacks in all three of those spots.
Looking ahead to this Sunday as we talk with Paul Charchian on Twitter at Paul Charchian. Check out guillotineleagues.com. Help you get set for your fantasy weekend. Of course, the big news this week, no Aaron Rodgers. So we get Jordan Love making his first start. So, again, let me squeeze two questions into one. Do you trust Love this weekend, and does this affect the other Packers at all this weekend?
So, all right, let's start. There's so many things to talk about with this. It's so juicy. I love it. First, you know, Rodgers massaged the truth, and there could be some significant fallout here, including him maybe being suspended. Could it be that Rodgers, this is not the only start we're going to get out of Jordan Love? That's a real possibility that comes out of this, is that, you know, maybe Aaron Rodgers misses more than one game. Maybe this team, if the team knew and facilitated his misdirection, they could end up being fined, suspended. He could be fined. They could be charged draft picks. I mean, you know, there's so many ways this could go. And then for the Packer fan base, what happens if Jordan Love is either awesome here or what if he's terrible? And what does that mean for your future with Aaron Rodgers? If Jordan Love, it looks great in this one game, his only start, does that facilitate Aaron Rodgers leaving? And if Jordan Love looks terrible in this one start, does that facilitate him staying in March? I mean, there's so many fascinating things. But just to drill down on this game, this is an easy, easy matchup, Luke. This is as soft a landing spot as you could ask for a first game. He gets Devontae Adams, Alan Lazard, and Marquez Valdes-Scantling all expected back for this game. Mm-hmm. Kansas City secondary has been a disaster. All three of the cornerbacks are bad, particularly Legarius Sneed and Mike Hughes. Their safety, Daniel Sorensen's giving up the most yards in coverage than any safety in the league, so the deep ball could be in play here. So there's a lot of ways that Jordan Love can have a successful run in this game, and I've only slightly dialed back Devontae Adams, Alan Lazard, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and, you know, granted, I'm not in any way suggesting Jordan Love is Aaron Rodgers, but I still think they can find success here.
The other big news this week in terms of a player unavailable, of course, Derrick Henry now moving forward. So, again, yeah. Two-part question. Number one being Adrian Peterson, McNichols, do we trust somebody like that? And the second aspect of this being, how does this affect, say, Tannehill, maybe even a Julio Jones? What's your read now on the Titans?
Yeah, so, by the way, coincidentally, Adrian Peterson set the single-game rushing record 14 years ago today.
Wow.
I don't know if you remember that game,
yeah.
Luke.
Oh, yeah.
297 yards.
Yeah, you know, I remember it well. It was remarkable.
Where do you think Adrian stacks up in the all-time running back list?
That's a good question. I think, for me personally, he is the best in my lifetime, which isn't as long as most. I think he's the best running back I have seen in person since I'll go back to Barry Sanders, personally.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Barry, obviously, amazing runner, and did stuff no other running back ever has done and probably ever will do. But the difference with Barry was, dude lost a lot of yardage. I mean, tackles for loss, stuff like that. You know, I just say Adrian was also just so unique. He was such a powerful freight train. He came at you so fast and so hard. He was just battering defenses to the point that guys didn't want to tackle. And that's, and you know, he's not that guy anymore, obviously, stylistically. He's now, he still has the excellent vision and footwork. He doesn't have the power and the top-end speed that he used to, but he can still be effective. Last season, he had 600 yards rushing. He should have already been on rosters, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Titans shouldn't have gotten away with this, signing him this late. You know, they don't have another running back who's built for inside running. And I believe Adrian's going to get, even this week, on 5 days to learn the playbook, I think he still gets 10 to 15 rushes in this game. And if there's any goal line work, that likely goes to him as well. The Rams are the opponent, Luke. They're not an elite defense like they were last year. They're top third in most rushing metrics. They're not top three. They're not top five. They're top third. I think Adrian can get a little something done here. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get 50, 60 yards and a coin flip's chance at a touchdown.
And in regards to moving forward for the Titans, does this change how you look at a Tannehill or those receivers?
Yeah.
You know, good or bad?
Oh, for sure. You know, nothing's lazier than fantasy experts who will say, well, without Derrick Henry, that's going to, you know, that means there's going to be a lot more balls to AJ Brown, and that's going to mean this passing game's going to take off. I mean, it's like, nah, taking Derrick Henry out of an offense doesn't help anybody. You know, that's just fewer trips across the 50, fewer trips into the red zone, fewer trips inside the five. I mean, it's just, there's no part of this that's good for that offense. Defenses that used to have to play to first and foremost stop Derrick Henry are now going to play first and foremost to stop Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown.
A couple of last things with Paul Charchian on Twitter, at Paul Charchian. The Niners' backfield is always hard to figure out. Are we buying high on Eli Mitchell these days for the Niners?
Yeah, I mean, I wish he were fully healthy. Unfortunately, yeah. He's got a rib injury. But, yes, I mean, it's not only do you get one of the few, like, workhorse running backs in the league, which he is, but you get a run-first offensive mentality. And Mitchell's looked good so far. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is it's a good opportunity. I still think people don't get how good he is, even though he's coming off back-to-back 100-yard performances with a touchdown. The guy could finish out as a top 10 running back from this point forward, assuming he's able to get through this rib injury. So, Yeah, it's a great opportunity for Elijah Mitchell. You're still buying low on Elijah Mitchell right now.
Okay, and let me maybe go off the grid a little bit. Tyrod Taylor's supposed to come back. Some guys may need quarterbacks this week. Is Taylor somebody that you can plug and play right away for even the one-win Texans?
Well, I mean, you probably don't need to go to Tyrod Taylor, but to be clear, he was pretty good in the games that we saw him in at the beginning of the season. And it was only a handful of games. I'm looking it up right now. It was two games. He had completed 71% of his passes, put up a 300-yard game, and put up another game. The game that he left early, he ran for a touchdown and threw another one, and he left at half. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like for Taylor here, who would perform pretty well. But it's still the Texans. I mean, the biggest advantage you have with any Texans quarterback is they're always losing and passing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let me get you out of here on our typical last two questions. Along those same lines, for people that may be in desperate need of plugging in somebody this weekend, who are a couple of sleepers you like this weekend?
Yeah, none more than Taysom Hill. Now, he started four games last season, and he's going to be the Niners starter likely for this game. We believe he'll come back from the concussion protocol. And going forward, in his four starts last year, Hill finished as quarterback 4, quarterback 14, quarterback 6, and quarterback 10. It's because he runs the ball.
Yeah.
He's a very limited passer, but he averaged 53 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown per game in those four starts that he had, 53-1. That makes you a starting running back in fantasy football, and all the passing he does give you is just gravy on top of that. And here comes Atlanta. They're getting killed by rushing quarterbacks. They've allowed the fourth most quarterback rushing yards. So we'll start Taysom Hill this week just on that alone. And for one more player that I like as a sneaky play, Jeremy McNichols. We talked about Adrian Peterson, but Jeremy McNichols is the incumbent there. He's not an inside runner, but they will run him a fair amount in this game, and they throw to him a lot. And the Rams are giving up the 9th most receptions and the 8th most receiving yards per game. So I think you could start him in a pinch if you needed somebody that, you know, you needed a little bit of help with, that could ultimately end up making some sense. Down on Kirk Cousins and the Vikings, as you can imagine, coming off the terrible loss, and now the Vikings are going to be without their best pass rushing defensive end, Danielle Hunter, and I'm worried that things are unraveling in Minnesota a little bit here, and the Ravens have generally been pretty stout at home, so I've got the lowest ranking of the season on Kirk Cousins this week.
All right, so there you go. Answered my next question as well. Down on Kirk and the Vikings.
I knew where you were going with this because we've had this discussion
that's
before.
Right.
Many
times. That's why you're the best. Paul Charchian on Twitter, @PaulCharchian. Check out guillotineleagues.com. Get his free player rankings there and join a guillotine league. Right, Charch, you still have new leagues ongoing?
This week and next week, and then that's it. But there's still over half a season left, so you can still get into the Guillotine League for 10 more weeks and hopefully survive longer than Luke did. Made it, 4 weeks, I think, Luke?
Something like
but
that.
But hey,
yeah.
4 weeks. If you start now, 4 weeks is half of the remaining season, so that's not
true.
So bad.
That's true. GuillotineLeagues.com. Do better than I did. Get his free player rankings as well. He's Paul Charchian. Charch, appreciate it. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, Luke. Bye-bye.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Paul Charchian. He's the best. Delivering the bad news to our Minnesota Vikings, because he's a Vikings fan as well. Tell you what, though, the Ravens have the worst pass defense in the league. So, you know, if Justin Jefferson doesn't get more than 4 targets this week like this past Sunday, then heads need to roll there in Minnesota with how things are going. And I remember that day well, 14 years ago, watching Adrian Peterson run for 296 against the Chargers at the Metrodome, over 200 of those yards coming in the second half, and yet you still had to sweat it out to the very end. He had 300 yards as a rookie, and the game was still hanging in the balance to the very end against the Chargers. Cromartie had a 109-yard missed field goal return for a touchdown. That was a wild game in 2007. Adrian Peterson, for my money, going back to Sanders, I think he's the best running back. Now, I'm biased. He played for the Vikings. I loved watching Adrian play, but I think we forget how good he was because he's hung around. He hasn't had a great season since 2015, but yet he's still been in the league for 6 years since then. So I think it kind of warps your memory that you watch him now as a 36-year-old running back averaging less than 4 yards a carry, and, you know, he doesn't have the same burst. But if you go back, sometimes I'll fall down a rabbit hole on YouTube of watching his highlights. There is nobody I like to watch run more than Adrian Peterson in the last 20-plus years. What he did in those early years, I mean, again, that season as a rookie in 2007, he set the record with 300 yards against the Chargers. And he had another game that year on the road against the Bears when they were had those great defenses where he had like 250 yards against the Bears. He was so dominant early on in his career. And the fact that he's still playing in the NFL at 36, right, most running backs don't last that long either. Adrian Peterson, for my money, best running back of the last 20-plus years. And certainly my favorite to watch in the last 20-plus years. Back when he was in his prime. Appreciate the time from Charge, as always. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. I'll circle back to what I was talking about before Charge joined us. Tony Elliott. What is the job market going to be like for him this offseason? And who's a quarterback that both Clemson and South Carolina should both target? It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the quarterback that both the Gamecocks and Clemson should be targeting. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Wrapping up hour two. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Paul Charchian. Breaking down this weekend in football, helping you set your fantasy lineups as well. If you ever miss anything from the show, such as Charch's Insight, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. Tony Elliott is mentioned as a candidate for TCU. TCU is working to interview the following coaches: Deion Sanders, Jay Norvell, Tony Elliott, and Kellen Moore. Interesting list to me. Deion Sanders, I mean, we know the deal. He's at Jackson State for this is his second season. He's missed a couple games this year. They've been about a 500 team, but it's more about what he could bring to the program. You bring maybe an NFL staff, you bring a lot of attention. Somebody like that you believe can recruit. Now you give him the resources of a TCU. I'm just not in on Deion's got to show me he can coach before I would hand him the keys to a Power 5 program. And I'm not watching Jackson State football every week, I'll tell you that. But, you know, like I need to see him have sustained success and big-time success instead of just simply not ruining things. Like, you know, being a 500 coach to me isn't enough to say like, okay, yep, this is the guy that's going to lead TCU to conference championships. I want to see a little bit more before I just hand things over because of the name value. Jay Norvell's interesting at Florida State because most people would believe that it's been a disaster there at Florida State, and yet TCU's interested. Kellen Moore is obvious, the Cowboys' offensive coordinator. Everybody's going to be interested in Kellen Moore, and then, of course, you know he's right there in Texas already, so you have the local tie, the local connection. I think if I'm Kellen Moore, I could hold out for a better gig than head coach of TCU, but maybe he's interested in college football or even Texas, you know, staying within Texas. But I think he'll get an NFL head coaching opportunity the way this season has gone. And then Tony Elliott. So really it's a list of four names that they bring something good to the table. But, you know, like Jay Norvell was a better candidate 2 years ago than now. Tony Elliott seemed to be a better candidate a few months ago than now. But you don't throw out his past success because of just one down year this season. And I'm interested now, starting with TCU, to see how many teams would be interested in him. And how many would be turned off by this season? Would potential employers that once liked Tony Elliott as a head coach, are they still interested or are they turned off by what they've seen this year? How many times are we going to hear his name be brought up for all these other jobs? Does anything change for him in the job market? That's what I'm interested to see. And as I said before in the show, you know, it can just be an outlier. We've all had bad months, weeks, days, maybe even a bad year at work or in your own personal life. You had some things going on. It was a tough year. But it's the outlier. It sticks out because it was so different from the rest. And maybe that's just simply the case this year. But you hear from a lot of people around football, they talk about how basic the offense is. There's been no adjustments. They have to be more creative. They got to do this. They got to do that. They haven't developed the talent. You know, it doesn't reflect so well in the offensive coordinator. If you're a Clemson fan, would you really care so much now compared to years past if he does leave for a job? And if I'm Tony Elliott, would that job be TCU? Based off of the past interest, I would say no. Maybe things have cooled this year. We'll see. But I think Tony Elliott could do better than even a TCU. And that's a solid gig, right? It's Texas. They care. It's the Big 12. They put in resources into that program. They've only been 500 the last 4 years. So, you know, it's not like they weren't just in the playoff last year. You know, the expectations may be a little bit lower. Let me switch to this before we go here for the top of the hour. I've been teasing it all afternoon. A quarterback that both Clemson and South Carolina should be interested in. And that's Miles Brennan, the quarterback of LSU who announced he's going into the transfer portal. Now, both teams should be interested. For South Carolina, you may think, oh, Miles Brennan, right, he's not going to want to go to the Gamecocks. And that could be the case. But they still offer, you know, the fact that it is the SEC. You can come in and start right away. And Shane Beamer, the big calling card for Beamer is his recruiting ability. So if you get him in a room with Miles Brennan, maybe he could sell him on the program, come be our starting quarterback. And we know the Gamecocks need a quarterback. And Miles Brennan was a four-star coming out of high school that just because of injuries really never worked out at LSU. But when he was on the field, looked pretty good and was supposed to be the starting quarterback this year. He was the one that suffered that freak injury while fishing just before the start of the season because of his flip-flops got caught, and he fell and out for the year, now transferring. If I'm the Gamecocks, I'm going hard after Miles Brennan. Say, hey, you could stay in the SEC. You could be our starter next year. Here's what we're building here. Right, come be our guy. The Gamecocks need a quarterback. If I'm Clemson, I'm also interested. I know Dabo, we've talked about this ad nauseum. He's not into the transfer portal, but here's an opportunity to dip your toes in for the first time. Because if I'm Clemson, I'm not settled the quarterback position right now. And I don't trust DJ moving forward. And Clade Kubnik's coming in next year. The way things just went with DJ, I'd be a little concerned about, you know, handing the keys over to a freshman and expecting it to work out. It did with Trevor Lawrence. Doesn't mean it's going to with every quarterback. Whereas you can bring in a Miles Brennan, who is a veteran. He's played in the SEC. He's a little bit older. And while Klubnik develops, or maybe you even wait on an Arch Manning, or, you know, he's that holdover. He comes in, he's your quarterback for a year. And for Clemson, after the season they had this year, you know you're going to want to bounce back next year. He could be that guy right away instead of waiting on a freshman to develop. You bring in a Miles Brennan, an experienced quarterback, and you're good to go. With all that said, he is from Mississippi. His brother played at Ole Miss. You know what Lane Kiffin could do at quarterbacks. It's still the SEC. I think Miles Brennan may go to Ole Miss next year, be the next Matt Corral. Hour three next.